Welcome to another episode of the Cognition and Code podcast, Psychology in South Africa. I'm your host, Dylan Bennion, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking about something that's extremely close to my heart, the Masters Mentorship Network. The next two podcast episodes will form part of a series, where I'll be discussing the Masters Mentorship Network, what it is, why I started it, and how it'll change in the future. In the episode following this one, we'll hear from participants from the 2020 Masters Mentorship Network, one mentor and their mentee, sharing their experiences and illustrating the benefits of mentorship in the field of psychology. If you're interested in getting involved, please make sure you listen till the end of this episode, where I'll be sharing all the details you need to become either a mentor or a mentee. Excellent. Let's jump right in. If you've been following Cognition & Co. for a little while now, you would have probably seen the ads we make for the Masters Mentorship Network towards the beginning of every year. Well, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to provide some background and context in terms of what the program actually is and why I created it. I also want to introduce our listeners and potential participants in the program to some individuals that have been a part of the network and let them describe how it worked for them and what they got out of it. But in the meantime, let's discuss the history of the Masters Mentorship Network. Okay, so what exactly is the Masters Mentorship Network then? Well, in order to explain this, it's important to give you the bigger picture and the reasoning behind it all. Flashback to 2018, before I'd even started Cognition & Co. I just returned from Hong Kong, where I'd been living and working for the previous 3 years while I completed my honors degree in psychology. So I came back to South Africa with the specific intention of applying for a professional master's degree in clinical psychology, and this was going to be the first year I was going to put myself into that situation of applying. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast and you've seen me talk at some of the conferences or workshops that we've done, you would have known that before I started applying, I was really naive to the fact that it was so difficult to get into masters. I'd heard a number of people talking about how difficult it was, but I didn't really think too much of it, to be honest. Having studied through a distance university, it was never something that was really brought up during my course. Therefore, when it came time to apply for the first time, I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. My mentality going in was something like this. I knew I was a strong student academically. I had just graduated my honors with distinction. I'd also just spent 3 years working in a foreign country with individuals from all over the whole world. This really helped me form a worldly perspective, but also gave me an understanding of who I was within the landscape of South Africa. It also made me feel confident that I knew where I fitted within the world of psychology. I approached my first selection season feeling confident and motivated that I'd be the right candidate for any program. I really felt like I got this. You may already know my story, but if you don't, you'll find out soon enough. I didn't got this. So once I started applying, I started to notice how intense and arduous these applications were. The universities wanted a great deal of information about various aspects of my personal life, outside of the academic realm. And that's what got me thinking about what I'd heard from other people. Is this myth of masters being so hard to get into actually true? So in order to find out, I reached out for some guidance from a friend of mine who'd studied psychology previously and has actually finished his master's in clinical psychology. He was extremely helpful and really gave me a good grounding with which to move forward. He also helped me set realistic expectations as he talked me through his experiences of applying and getting selected. He actually did such a good job of explaining the applications and selections that I asked him to do a podcast once Cognition & Co. had been set up. Go back and listen to episode 2 with Christopher Kemp to find out exactly what you need for applications and referee reports. Jumping forward a couple of months, by this point I'd completed all my applications and submitted all my applications, and I just received my first selection invitation from the University of Pretoria. Now, I've spoken about my experience at the University of Pretoria a number of times, but for the sake of this podcast, all you need to know is that I didn't get selected. I was waitlisted, but from what I understand, no one was ever called from the waitlist that year. So this is where things slowly started to unravel for me. After not securing a place at the University of Pretoria that year, I also was not selected to interview at any other universities. So I was now back in South Africa, living in a city far from my family, with no options to continue my studies in my field, with no job, no income, no direction. So even though I hadn't physically lost something, the sense of loss that I was feeling and the grief that I felt over that loss was overwhelming. What was I supposed to do with my life now? Did I have to wait another year to apply for masters again? Should I study something else? I really had no idea. I really did not know at all. The following piece I'm going to read you now comes from an article that I'd written about my grief and loss, and I think it sums up what I was going through quite nicely. The feeling was devastating. I felt as though I'd worked extremely hard over the past several years in order to get the grades I felt I needed in order to be a successful candidate. I felt lost on a number of levels. The top of that list was that the University of Pretoria, and subsequently the other universities too, did not believe that I was a good enough candidate for their programs. Even if that wasn't necessarily the case, I lost a great deal of faith in my abilities, as well as my sense of self. Secondly, I'd moved back from Hong Kong to South Africa in order to pursue this goal, and I gave up a lot of first world luxuries in order to do so. I know that I chose to do this on my own accord. However, not getting accepted no longer made the move feel worth it. I left a good job with ample opportunity to progress through the company, as well as an extremely lucrative salary, an aspect that would cause further issues later in my story. I knew that without an HPCSA registration, I wouldn't be able to work in any counseling fields, and I knew that without a master's degree, I probably wouldn't be qualified enough to lecture or teach. Finally, I felt as though I'd lost time. It would be another year before I could apply again, and there was no guarantee that I would get in the following year. Side note, I didn't. This loss in time also meant that I would have to delay the goals I'd set in my personal life, such as having children and getting married. In saying that, it meant that I'd also be affecting the lives of those around me, like my fiancé at the time, and my family. I felt like a prisoner that was being denied parole, trapped once again with no option but to sit, wait, and try to prepare better for the next attempt. To make it perfectly clear, I wasn't coping. I was slowly spiraling downwards into depression, and I knew that I needed to find a psychologist. Unfortunately, I was no longer in a position financially to do so, and things continued to get worse the longer I left it. But that's not even close to the end of the story. If you know about Cognition & Co., you'll know that I managed to focus my energy long enough into the initiative, and it's that helped me climb my way out of my depression. It was within my commitment to the students that I decided that I would do all that I could to make sure that no one else ever felt the way that I did after my rejection. I needed to make sure that any master's hopeful student that was in need had access to a mental health professional if things got too heavy for them. It was at that point that I started creating the framework that would eventually become the Master's Mentorship Network. The Master's Mentorship Network is an initiative that I launched in 2019 as an offering from Cognition & Co., whereby I would pair potential master's students with psychology professionals that have already been through the application and selection processes. Our mentees are any honors students or graduates that would be applying for various master's programs for the following year of study. Some of these individuals would be applying for the first time and have little experience in the process, while others may have been through the process several times and might require some fine-tuning and would appreciate the outside professional perspective of a mentor. All of our mentors are psychological professionals, registered with the HPCSA in different categories. Some of our mentors have been working in the field of psychology for a number of years and want to give back to the student community. Others might be more recent graduates, as well as some current master's students that have recently been through the selection process. The key factor is that these individuals are registered with the HPCSA and are recognized as professionals within the field of psychology. It is this professional involvement that helps us achieve the goals that we've set out for the initiative, as I'm about to discuss. There are two main functions that the Mentorship Network aims to achieve. The first is a motivational and guidance function that occurs during the application stage and during the selection process. Having been through the processes themselves, the mentors are able to help motivate and support their mentees as they arduously complete their applications and begin to get their minds around the selection processes. The second function is that of professional support after selections, if need be. Realistically, potential master's students have a relatively low chance of getting selected for a master's program, and due to the fact that the universities provide little to no feedback, many applicants are left feeling more confused than when they started the process. On top of that, some students aren't invited to any interviews, and that too can be equally as devastating. So the Master's Mentorship Network gives these mentees access to an HPCSA registered professional should they get to a point where they need a psychologist to help them deal with what they've just been through, just like I did. So the first Master's Mentorship Network was run in 2019, where I received 96 mentee applications and 34 mentor applications. I wanted the relationships to be as authentic as possible, and it's for that reason that I only paired one mentor with one mentee. This meant that I was able to successfully pair 34 mentees with 34 mentors. However, this did leave 62 potential master's students without a mentor, and I felt that if they at least applied, they shouldn't be left with nothing. So my plan here was to pair these students with each other so that they could find some support from each other. I called this the Master's Peer Support Network. In 2020, Cognition & Co. ran the Master's Mentorship Network again, but due to other projects on the go, I was not able to invest as much time into the program as what I had the year before. In 2020, we had 57 mentee applications and 24 mentor applications. This once again allowed me to create 24 successful pairings, but I decided against running the peer support network, as the feedback I'd received from the previous year was that the individuals only wanted professional mentors and did not see the benefit of being paired with another student, unfortunately. I'm not going to go into too much detail about the actual relationships created between the mentors and mentees, because these are quite unique. Besides, you'll get a first-hand experience in the next episode of this podcast. What I can describe is the roles of the mentors and mentees as outlined by Cognition & Co. within the program. The role of a mentor is to facilitate in answering some of the questions that mentees might have about the application and interview processes involved with masters. The overall goal is to create a facilitative dialogue that can be beneficial to the mentee during this arduous time. Following the initial contact and introductions, we advocate that the mentors discuss their boundaries and time constraints with their mentee. We know as psychological professionals, the mentors might have a lot on their plates. Some might be working in private practice, others in institutions, and we ask that the mentees take heed of this. Establishing and maintaining boundaries is one of the first lessons that can be taught to a mentee, and something that can be applied throughout the mentee's psychological career. As this is a national mentorship network, it's not always possible to pair individuals that live in the same town or city. I know that in previous years, some of the mentorship pairs have met in person, but the challenges of 2020 have definitely kept the pairs talking over email, WhatsApp, and Zoom. The role of the mentee is the simple one. You just got to be a mentee. We know that you'll have a number of questions for your mentor going forward, but we ask that the mentees remember that the mentors are psychological professionals and do have busy schedules. It's important to learn how to set and maintain realistic boundaries with your mentor in order to get the most out of your relationship. Speaking of which, one of the issues we've had over the last couple of years is the fact that because this is a free initiative for the students' level of commitment sometimes vary, and there have been cases where mentees have ghosted their mentors. I find this particularly sad when I hear about it, because, like I said earlier, there were 62 potential master's students that weren't paired with mentors in 2019, and I'm sure that they would have loved the opportunity to interact with a mentor if they were able to. So if you're listening to this and you want to get involved, please get involved wholeheartedly. And don't waste the opportunity if you're selected. Moving forward with the Masters Mentorship Network in 2021, we will see some new changes to help deal with some of these issues that have been raised in the past. Firstly, we have recruited 5 volunteers to act as mentorship facilitators. These 5 individuals will be working specifically with the Masters Mentorship Network to facilitate and maintain the relationships throughout the application and selection seasons. Every successful pair will be allocated a mentorship facilitator, and if either mentor or mentee have any questions or concerns, they may reach out to their facilitator. The mentorship team will also be helping us recruit more mentors for the program. So if you're listening to this now because a facilitator sent it to you, then they've done their job and I hope that you sign up. Creating this team of mentorship facilitators is the first step in the expansion of Cognition & Co., whereby I am able to help give experience to the psychology students of South Africa, without them overstepping any scope of practices. Should this year's team be successful in facilitating the network, then we will continue to recruit more students in the years to come. I believe that by introducing these passionate individuals, we will be able to strengthen the mentorship relationships within the program and help the facilitators gain some incredible networking experience as well. In fact, the more I talk on this subject, the more I believe that this initiative has the potential to be massive, not just in the field of psychology, but others as well. I also believe that it should probably be documented in literature. So if there's anyone out there that would like to make our Masters Mentorship Network a part of your thesis, dissertation, doctorate, please get in touch with me. I'd be happy to share the information that I've collected, and you're welcome to use this podcast as a reference. Should you wish to get involved as either a mentor or a mentee, please take note of the following dates. We'll begin recruiting mentors in January every year, and this will continue until the end of February. Mentee applications will open in February and close when we start the pairing process at the beginning of March. Please make sure that you keep an eye on our website, cognitionandco.co.za/mentorship, as well as our social media accounts for more details. As I mentioned earlier, this will be a 2-part series, and it's within the next episode that we'll be talking to a mentor and a mentee from the 2020 Mentorship Network. Here we'll discuss the more intimate and subjective parts of the relationship and just see how beneficial it can be. A massive thank you to everybody who's tuned in today, and I purposely kept this one short as to not deter any potential mentors. If you do have any questions in the meantime, please feel free to email me at info@cognitionandco.co.za or send us a message on one of our social media accounts. Make sure you don't miss the next episode by hitting the subscribe button on your favorite podcast streaming app. Thanks a lot. See you soon.